You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The official Brighton and Hove Albion podcast.
Hello, I'm Paul Haywood.
And I'm Glenn Murray.
Welcome to the podcast that brings you the top players, commentators, coaching staff, and now, leaders in the world of fashion.
From George Best through to David Beckham, there's always been a link between fashion and football, and memorable kits. Paul is old enough to remember Coventry in brown and dagger collars that will be banned by FIFA today. But what about today's top players? Who's the most stylish and who's got the best football fashion?
We're joined by Chris Gove, founder and director of Percival Menswear, who will tell us about dressing the England manager and the link between the terraces and the fashion world. Chris, we're going to talk about fashion in a minute, but first, tell us about your interest in Brighton and Hove Albion.
Oh, I've got a good connection with Brighton for many years. My grandparents, we're up in Ditchling, so I visit them every other weekend. My parents have lived here for the past 20 years, and I need that childcare support. So I've been down in Brighton in some form or another my whole life. Yeah, I just love it. I grew up in Portsmouth, so you know, it's a bit better.
Hey, tell me you're a bit of a super fan, is that right? A kind of anorak fan? You know everything, you watch everything, you digest everything?
I think you've nailed it.
Yeah, you don't need to say
it. It would be my mastermind subject. I'm a late fan to the game. My parents were in the NHS a whole life. I wasn't from a sporting family, and I grew up with the Pompey Saints rivalry like on my doorstep. My postcode was like SO and the road over was PO, and I was just told to stay away from it because the stat every derby, the stat was like how many arrests were in the local, whether it was home or away. So it was just like a pretty spicy environment, and my parents would just keep me away from it. They were like, listen, don't get involved in that. And then coming to Brighton, I just remember seeing in all the papers at the time about Brighton not having a stadium. And it was a massive thing. And it was my grandparents always had an opinion on it, of where it should be or what the state of the club was. And then just from an early age, getting that in my ears. And then, yeah, it sort of grew from there, really.
Any standout Albion moments in your memory?
Yeah, I mean, a whole of last season is one, but you can't just say that, can you? One thing recent, I tell you what, I was just having a really rubbish weekend and then Evans Ferguson scored 3 goals. I just loved watching it. And I think my kid was being a nightmare. And in the background, he did that. And I was like, ah, it's going to be fine. Yeah. Just love that young talent coming through.
Plenty of picked up from at the moment.
You can mend your weekend, kind of, football.
Yeah.
You can also spoil it.
Yeah, like last weekend. That was so frustrating. That goal in the last. Yeah. Let's not go on about it.
This connection between football and fashion. Yeah. Well, tell us about Percival and tell us about your particular interest in where football meets fashion.
Yeah, well, I think like there's never been such a strong intersection between men's style specifically and sport. And we're seeing that across all different sports like NFL, basketball. And I think football's one of those ones that has an amazing legacy in fashion, like 90s and noughties footballer fashion. Is probably some of the interesting and some of the worst uses of money.
that's Glenn's favourite era, by the way. You just told me that before we came on.
If you go back now, there's some amazing haircuts and stuff like that. I think now when you look at how men want to dress. I think it's post-COVID, the casualization of the office, so you don't just have to wear a suit. Suddenly men are like, you're open to, you can wear anything you want. And guys are like, wait, there's so many options on the table, what do I do? And I think out there on the high street, there's some opaque kind of dusty brands that have existed for a while that you can have a choice, or a big logo. And I think...
Did you just refer to it as dusty?
Yeah, I do. Because I see Percival as like a challenger brand. Like, I think I won't name any names. I don't know if they might come for me. But I just think you go in a few stores, the men's stores you can go in, you'd be like, I don't know anything about this brand. I don't know really the ownership, the structure. I'm buying these garments. Where are they from? Where are they made? It's just a really transactional. And I think like now, if you're going to buy something, you've got a responsibility to understand where it's from, who owns it, what the goal of the company is. And I think there's no other option now but to have an involvement in that. And so Percival was just trying to be transparent about everything. Like, we tell the story to the customers about how much money we made in a year, how much money we lost, where we try and make stuff, where we've made mistakes. So it's quite a community-driven brand. And we found growing, trying to use performance marketing is really expensive. And we were looking at like affinity interests. Like, I love football, play football every week. That's all we talk about in the office, in the menswear office. We talk about football. And then it took us like a year and we were like, wait, why can't contemporary men's and football be in the same breath? And we found people looking at Percival, then they'd look at BBC Sport. And we're like, that's the same world that you inhabit. Like, that cardigan you wear, great choice. But also you're from a footballing background. Like, it's the same world of interests as you inhabit. And so we were like, well, how can we get these two worlds to exist at once? And it was, yeah, we ended up dressing Gareth Southgate for the Euros. When they were in 2021, they were delayed by a year,
yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah.
And his whole thing was, how do I not wear a waistcoat my whole life?
Yeah, so that I was going to ask you about that.
That must have been quite an easy job, yeah, for you in all fairness.
Yeah, let's just take the waistcoat off and honestly be fine. You don't need
that. He did want to get away from the waistcoat, didn't he? So, but how did you end up putting a coat on him? The Sherlock coat, I think it's called.
The Sherlock, yeah. Yeah. Because there was an M&S deal that he had, and I think someone at the FA just didn't renew the deal in time, and we got the call as a British brand. Okay, it's kind of a brief here, and we had to pitch to Terry sitting off wing there. We got the call, and my investor was like, "Listen, you can go see Southgate tomorrow at Wembley in his hotel. You got to pitch something to him." And so we rocked up, and we hadn't really made suits before, and I had like the tailor's tape around my googling tailor terms on the way in. But no, we know what we're doing. And he was just like, listen, I just feel like it's a bit restrictive. I don't have to wear a waistcoat. Everyone's associated that with me. But when you look at that team, like how multicultural that team is, the young lads, like we're talking about how young those lads are, it's not about getting them to respect you. It's just, how can you be authentic? And like, I can't rock up in a waistcoat, can you? Like, who?
Well, I would never would, in all fairness. It's a snooker garment, isn't it, as far as I'm concerned. But what? So are you, as a manager... Do you think a manager should be suited and booted on the sidelines?
I think dressing is about what you're comfortable with doing. And I think sprinkling of aspiration on top of your comfort, and that's fine. Because I think like we make some spicy bits, like colour-wise, maybe like a mustard or like a cobalt blue. I don't expect every guy to wear that. So that's like a really small percent of the range. But the thing we do is like, okay, if I make a forest green, will you then choose that over navy? Because that's, you know, really wearable colour. And so with a manager, I think it's about what imbues what they represent. And with Gareth, Southgate, I guess it was like, he needs to be respected, but he also needs to have an affinity with the younger players. And when they look at him, they've got to see someone who knows what they're about. He's such a great leader. We've only met him like a handful of times. And the person you expect him to be, you guys probably have met him, he's that person. He like remembers your name straight away. Went and made a coffee for us, like was immediately just like engaged in asking us questions. And it's like, it's the England manager.
He's just normal.
He's a normal, nice guy. And I was like, well, he needs to dress like someone who, he's going to be on the sidelines getting hot and bothered. He wants to gesticulate. So a waistcoat, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me. So we were like, okay, can we give him a suit? Because he likes a suit. A suit can really empower a man. Like, you wear a suit, you're like, you feel it, but you don't want to be crispy and like too much like a teacher. So what's the balance? So we just came up with like a summer suit made out of slightly wintry fabrics, quarter lined in the back. So it's a bit looser and it had the movement, little sort of retro knitted polo, like sort of Italian Riviera. Pair those things together. It got something smart and casual. You could take that off, do the interview, put it back on. than the Sherlock if it rains. So you don't need to just be like Pulis tracksuit, but also at the same time you don't get the cap. But proper like
comfort style.
Yeah.
A bit of his personality in it.
Exactly, yeah.
So, Glenn, did you, when you looked across at the manager, did you care what the manager was wearing, or was the manager making a statement with the dugout gear?
I probably wasn't bothered about what the manager was wearing. I was probably bothered about my baggy tracksuit that was three sizes too big for me. I always felt as though I've played in teams where you would have to wear a suit to things, and I thought like a suit every weekend was like so stiff, like you say,
they would force you to do it. That was like the rules.
Yeah, so yeah, you'd have a club suit. It was. Yeah. This is back in the day. This is quite a while ago, and it was like. Yeah, I didn't enjoy that. I think it's right for the players to wear a tracksuit and be as comfortable as possible. And I think, like you say, after COVID and things, it's more acceptable now for people to be wearing tracksuits and things. And then a manager, I always think, should be wearing something a bit smarter. You should look up to him.
Because the middle ground now, Chris, is with, you know, I remember the time when you either wore a tracksuit with your trousers tucked in your socks and a pair of football boots. Why don't managers wear football boots on the touchline when they're not playing?
Don't want to slip,
clean. Because they don't need them anymore.
Yeah, that's true. And or a suit and tie, you know, the old august kind of old school manager. But now you've got this middle kind of what you call a Hugo Boss kind of dugout casual look.
Well, it's a statement though, isn't it? I mean, the world is going to see that manager on the touchline. So they've got, I think people, there's more of an expectancy to, obviously they're in the position because they're good at what they do, but you've got to look the part as well.
Yeah, I think you've got those guys looking to you to direct it all. But then I guess they're going to see you and stuff all week long, but it's your moment to shine.
No, they don't.
They don't?
They, you would never see.
The
manager will be the first in the building.
Yeah.
And more often than not, he'll be one of the last to leave. So the players will only see him in his training kit. And his training kit will be different to yours. So the manager, the coaching staff have a different colour to the players. So you can tell the difference. But so you won't really see the manager all week in anything. But he's
so that's the thing. So then when he comes out, he's got his 100 minutes and all while he's shouting at you.
Yeah.
Firstly, he can't be distracted by his waistcoat. But secondly, there's got to be authority and respect around that figure, isn't there?
Yeah, but he's also got to be relatable, I suppose, isn't he? Because if he looks like your grandfather, he might seem like a kind of a person from another age. So he's got to hit that middle ground maybe between...
Yeah, it's a balance, I think.
Between authority and relatability. God, I'm getting too technical now, aren't
but
I?
But I do...
No,
I,
it is true. I think it is. Yeah, it's important. Like Chris mentioned, like a lot of the lads are super young, even though we look at them as superstars and things, and you've got to try and be relatable. But you also need to present yourself as someone that knows what they're doing. And look, like I say, look, I think it's so important these days to look the part. Now you've got like social media, Instagram, and the media following of the Premier League. It's huge.
You can see them from all angles. Like coming off the bus at away, it's like a catwalk. And those lads, they're all into their gear now. And I think that's changed massively from 10 years ago. Like you used to get players dressing so terribly. Logos everywhere, whatever. Now
when don't have to speak about my career.
Well,
we'll just leave that one there, Chris.
What was your casuals coming off the if you weren't forced to wear a suit?
No, we would always have a tracksuit on. But that was actually one thing I wanted to ask you. So we see it in NFL a lot, don't we? And it gets loads of attention.
Is
what the guys wear, and they usually do the walk on their own, and they're getting papped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think that'll ever come to the Premier League?
100%. If there's an opportunity for. Firstly, the club or the brand or the individual to make money, because the players now are an entire business.
Yeah.
And so if there's a deal to be done, they will 100% do it. I think, for example, our suits, there's a few celebs that we can dress through a stylist who we have a great relationship with, and they'll wear to certain things. What we'll never be able to do is do a red carpet premiere generally, because you'll get a brand coming in, Gucci, for example, they'll be paying 150, 200K to just one superstar. And they'll have that moment and they'll pay for that moment. The way Americans franchise and advertise sport and monetize it is what we're starting to do more and more and more. Like, it's funny that talk of blue cards and stuff. Like, the fact that even stuff like that comes up, I think, is such an American mindset. And it's up to whoever to manage that expectation. But even now, you know, the advertising hoarding, how that can change. They can digitally manipulate that depending on the region. Like, where there's an opportunity, there will be one. And so if you're saying to Grealish, listen, slap that on you, here's your payment for that, we'll set, you know, it's going to happen, I think. And so a lot of the lads now, I think, are really clued up on what the brands are, what they like. And so they're all clued in. And I don't think you could always say that, like in a dressing room back 10, 15 years ago, were you chatting brands as much as...
Probably not as much as today. I think it's over the last 5-6 years, I think it's grown definitely. And obviously, we see at Fashion Weeks, footballers are like regular front row like Son, Saka, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's like one that goes off on a tangent. He's like so brave in what he wears.
His stylist is the same as, I think, as Harry Styles' stylist. Harry Lambert, I think, does him.
But that sort of that sector of football and fashion, it's just becoming even more so. We've seen, like, obviously, everyone knows about terrace fashion back in the day and stuff, and that still exists today.
Yeah.
But we're talking, like, more high-class fashion now, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But are there tribes on the terraces now? Because you used to see tribes in the 90s, you know, casuals, and there was a kind of uniform, but I don't really see that.
I've got young lad.
Right.
And I think there's a resurrection of that at the moment.
What, the casual thing? Or?
Yeah.
Right. So what would you wear?
Well, just what they would wear back in the day, CP
and
Stone Island, right, things like that. Right. Yeah, Adidas. Yeah.
There is a big resurgence of CP and Stone Island.
Yeah.
But they're classic heritage brands that have managed to maintain a really great kudos, and that is coming back. But I do think with the fan base, there's like a democratization of the sport happening where it is less tribal.
Mm.
I think it's, for me, that it's never been so acceptable for like families to go. It is changing those. I even find like five aside, the lads now won't turn up in like Liverpool, Man U. They won't turn up in their top six kit. They'll wear like a random...
like a Bronby or something like that.
Random away kit.
Yeah.
Like a vintage kit because
Red
they're
Star
just...
Belgrade or something.
Yeah, yeah. I found one the other day. I went to Florence and there was a vintage football shop and it was just like a gold mine. And all that was in there was people like me hunting for some mad weird kit. When all I actually want is the new Brighton away. Well, not new anymore, but you couldn't get that Brighton away. It's gone, isn't it?
What is your go-to on a five-a-side night?
I've got...
Please don't tell me you're not full kit. It's just top, isn't it? And random shorts and socks.
Yeah, it's always never full kit.
Yeah, not... No, yeah,
no, 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 yeah, okay. Yeah, so I held myself there, didn't I?
You got your bleeper.
Yeah, never shit. You've got... You can't wear shin pads or long socks either. You just got to wear a little, like...
Yeah.
With a white sock.
Okay.
Well, it's usually the Percival Umbro collab kit because it's my favourite kit. I've got a really good... I've got so many. I've got a Ukraine national kit because... of the invasion, so we all started buying Ukraine kits to show support. It's like the one thing we thought we could wear, started kicking the crap out of each other on a Tuesday, and a Ukraine kit is quite good. I love my Japanese kits. So I studied in Hong Kong when I was at uni, and I go to Japan a lot because it's close geographically, and I love just Japanese food, anime, all that. So I love Kara Matoma, by the way. He's like top guy. But there's an anime about football called Blue Lock, and the manga artist for that designed the Japanese national kit for the last tournament. And the Japan kit is always just so nice, I find. Mm. They just, you know, you have one kit they always just put some effort into. It's always a Japan kit. I've got like 3 or 4 Japan kits.
Are you saying Japan's the best country's kit?
Japan and South Korea as well. They just have such amazing kits.
I always thought Nigeria popped out.
Yeah, no, Nigeria is a good kit. I just didn't want to bandwagon it. The Nigeria kit is quite loud, though.
It's always a statement kit, isn't
Yeah,
it?
Statement kit, yeah, yeah.
The official Brighton and Hove Albion podcast.
What is this nostalgia? There's one thing that never changes, and that's British nostalgia for classic kits.
Yeah.
That's never going to go away, is it? I mean, for me, I like looking at kits from the 60s and 70s. No logos, just a club crest, and either a V-neck or a round neck.
Yeah.
But... people collect...
made of heavy cotton.
Exactly. We're not conducive to performance.
That's right.
Never mind.
Made of some rugby shirt material.
Yeah. But obviously, people collect the most appalling shirts, don't they? You know, they look like a packet of cheese and onion crisps all smashed up. I mean Glenn, you like a few of those, don't you?
I do like... But I think it's... I like the 90s era.
Yeah.
But I think that's just because it's got such memories for me as a kid growing up where, like, I knew everything about football. I knew every player.
Yeah.
All the kits. And I just... yeah, even when I was playing in kits, I'd be thinking, this is rubbish compared to like 10 years ago. But hopefully, I'm hoping these age really well and I can look back on my kits and enjoy them a bit more.
I think the sponsors from the 90s were great. It was always like tools or computing.
Yeah.
It's like the weirdest, coolest. Like the classic one is that West Ham Dr. Martin sponsored kit.
Yeah.
Which now, like, you know, we went to New York last October, had a pop-up shop that was like talking about football and men's. It's like a little pop-up space where we had lots of like scarves, old vintage football kits. We had a loafer collaboration that we put studs on. It's a bit fun, but we had the mainline stuff in there. And football is huge in New York. It's like blowing up, but they don't really get, I think, don't hate me, don't at me. The leg, like they're all wearing these 90s kits And he's like, you've got some lad in like, yeah, like a West Ham away. And you're like, you've never even, do you even know?
Like, he doesn't even know what Upton Park is.
Well, that's
never
it.
Never heard of Julian Dix,
and we had a...
Forever blowing bubbles.
Yeah, like they would never heard of Upton Park for sure. And we had this like thing in the store where it was about soccer and style. And we had Dan Sanderson from Mundial Magazine, great mag, and he's from Liverpool. So he's like diehard, knows all the history of all the kits, like a diehard fan. And he's talking about, you know, how what the relevancy is. But should you really be wearing it? It's like a band tee. Should you really be wearing a Nirvana tee if you don't like Nirvana? Or is it just cool? Yeah. But they just will wear it. And so there's some real diehards on one hand and some fashionistas on the other. It's a really great discussion because on one hand, whatever, just wear it. It's great, right? As long as you're supporting the sport out there. On the other hand, you haven't a clue what you're wearing.
What it means. I mean, there's people balling around New York in Millwall tops. What?
Yeah, that's it. And this one, I met this one guy. He was like, oh, it's not about a sponsor for me. Like, I really want to get those kits that had the Spider-Man sponsor on. So Spider-Man, the films, were a sponsor. Remember, films were like temporary sponsors.
I can't remember that.
You had like Spider-Man. The Amazing Spider-Man was one.
Whose kit?
I can't remember. You have to give it a Google. I feel like, does anyone remember that?
Something
Italian,
was it?
Yeah, was it an Italian kit?
Atletico Madrid, I saw that earlier, yeah. Atletico. Okay.
So they're just after that rare sponsored kit. Yeah. So it's like, when does it become not about football?
Some of these collectors, are they addicted? Is the compulsive behaviour out there around, you know, filling a house full of 1,000 kits? I imagine there is.
Yeah, I think it's probably quite collector-driven. One thing we did find is that in New York, they're actually using the word football, not soccer. So I think there's like, it is moving.
That's a positive.
Moving
forward.
That's
a positive, definitely. Yeah.
Loads of Arsenal fans, though, loads.
When you look at Premier League games now, very often the reaction when you're looking on TV is, why are they wearing that kit? You know, why are Everton in red? Or why are... With second and third kits, the departure from what you think of as the traditional norm, quite shocking sometimes, isn't it? And do you wonder about the designers, some of the designers of these big companies?
I love a wacky third.
Do you?
Do you not?
Well,
who do you think, out of the Premier League, take Brighton out of it?
Okay.
So who's got the best style and branding?
It's probably Arsenal.
Yeah.
They put so much effort into the...
I personally think they nail it.
It's so mad that other teams don't look at it and go, there's a whole ecosystem of fashion here with like collaborations. Like they did the Maharishi one, they did the TFL one.
Yeah.
They did the...
The knife one.
Which was quite controversial because it's fully white and everyone's like, why are you dressed like Spurs? But it's a good, it's a great project.
But their kits are beautiful in all fairness.
Amazingly made. And yeah, that just, why wouldn't you have a kit collaboration? I think like something Brighton could do.
Maybe.
Define your ambition in football, Chris. What do you want to do mostly? Dress players, dress clubs?
We're embarking on now a journey where maybe we're looking at actually making kits ourselves. I think there's some challenger brands in sportswear at the minute. And I think what we can represent is that both sides of sport and contemporary. Like I think with our attitude to how casual should be, contemporary, not too spicy, maybe leaning into a bit of interest if you want. I'd love to, we're looking at starting making kits and we're looking at some lower league teams, some championship teams that maybe we can be the kit supplier and supply the team with what they need to travel, to do the kit, to be this whole one-stop shop. That's my ambition.
Where would you be more creative, on-field or off-field, with what you dress the guys in?
It's generally 70-30 to what we feel is commercial and then a bit of spice. So, you know, I think what we've got with the men's is a good balance. I think with the kit, I'd always want a spicy third in there. Or I'd push as much as I can on the away. I think with the home kit, you don't want to play with it much.
Traditional.
I think that's a legacy you wouldn't want to disrupt at all.
Who's the best dressed person in football?
Right now. I was really looking at Madders the other day. He dresses quite well now. Because I don't know, he just made a good selection of stuff. It was just on his Instagram. Son's always in a Burberry campaign. You see him more in Burberry campaigns.
I like Son. He's a good guy.
I really like Son.
I think he's the most liked Premier League footballer.
Mm. And he plays for Spurs, which is mad.
Yeah.
I suppose I ought to clarify. Madders is James Maddison, obviously. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Just for anyone who's never seen a Tottenham Hotspur game, you know.
I'm trying to think who's well dressed. I think, to be honest, like we mentioned earlier in the pod about the NFL thing, I think boys are making more and more of an effort. And like you say, they do realise with the rise of social media and the interest, the global interest in the Premier League, there's just so many opportunities out there for them.
There is, yeah. I mean, a few of them have got, like Declan Rice dresses quite well. Ben Chilwell dresses well. Grealish loves his like mad brands, but it suits his character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're all making definite choices.
Mm.
Like no one's walking out going, "I just chuck that on." So
you don't see them Monday to Friday walking in here at 9:45. But yeah, when they need to dress, then they can.
yeah, that's it. Can you make a nice curated choice when you need to?
Yeah. Chris, you've dressed a lot of people now. I mean, the list is pretty endless, but up there, I would say Beckham, the Marvel guys, The Rock. Is there anyone out there that you really want to get your hands on? In a good way.
Get me hands on. Do you know what? I'd like to get my hands on a few more football players. I'd like to get my hands on Karim Mbeumo.
Put it out there, come on.
Yeah. Well, the Karim, if you want any bits, we're here. Although, I think The Rock was like the final boss of trying to dress someone. Like when we dressed The Rock. Well, we didn't. Ilaria Urbanati, his stylist, makes the choices and is an amazing stylist. She picked from us and dressed him, so we don't dress him directly, to be clear. But she did him, and then Ryan Reynolds.
Rock, you had to make the stuff specially for him. Right? It doesn't fit into normal gear.
We woke up one day and he was wearing it.
Oh, so he fitted into normal size?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
XL. Or was it triple XL? Let's say triple X. Double X.
The biceps, yeah.
I mean, he's stretching the
hair. Yeah.
I don't know how many wears he's getting from it. Once he's stretched it. But yeah, Rock, Ryan Reynolds, Andrew Garfield. So there's a couple of those lads and they look great in it as well. But I think sports is next. Like, because we have our DNA in sports more than films. I'd love to get some footballers in it.
And one thing I did want to ask you while you're here, when you're casually walking down the street in a city, say London, and you see somebody in one of your pieces, are you like, I tell people, like really happy about it? Or are you like, that's like the 2017 collection, he needs to get some new gear?
Both of those thoughts. I love seeing it because we're a tiny brand and I just love seeing it. And we have this internal, Slack, the internal communication thing you have with teams. We have this thing called Percy in the Wild, so we just snap someone and it's always so blurry. It's someone on the tube or on the move, so we've got all these blurry pictures of dudes who'd probably be suing us for like snapping them. But sometimes if it's just I'm sitting next to them, I'll be like, oh, nice jacket, mate, what do you think about it, and just get some like anonymous feedback.
And well, you will not let on who you are.
No, I'd just be like, oh, where'd you get that? And they're like, oh, this brand. Or sort of once this guy was like, oh, the button fell off, yeah, I don't know whether to send it back. And I was like, no, don't send it back. Honestly, if you just ask them for another button, you'll get one.
And fashion, as we know, is a fast-moving business, planned obsolescence and all that. And whatever we're looking at now is not what we're going to be looking at in 2 years. What are we going to be looking at in 2 years?
I think generationally, in the business of fashion, they said the biggest growing sector is vintage or reworn. And it makes sense that it is. I don't know how profitable that is for brands. I know like brands like Vestiaire make their money from resend luxury. But I think from like everyday clothes, like vintage is growing so quickly. It's ease of being able to resell things. And so I think you're going to get like a lot of people now, we see they mix in like a vintage piece, a really curated, like vintage football shirts is a great example of that. And so it's about, for us, owning that fashion life cycle. So can people return stuff and we give them a discount and then resell that? I think it's our responsibility now to own where the garment goes and where it comes back to us in the end, even if it's damaged and or destroyed. So I think vintage is just weirdly the next big, the small little trends like for men mohair, for men crochet, but like the biggest growing sector is vintage stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's come right back round.
Yeah. Well, that's encouraging because that's got to be good, hasn't it? I mean, my kids are on vintage all the time and it just makes sense. You could have your own vintage.
I thought you were going to say that's encouraging because your wardrobes.
Honestly, I thought that's where it's going. Pull all these suits out of the act from...
I forgot to mention my John Smedley.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Lovely, Nick.
Yeah. Can't beat John Smedley. Well, you might be able to, but, you know.
No, they do a real fine gauge of knit.
They do. Absolutely right. Thank you. That's made my day.
What's next for Percival?
now is all about for us, because we're a UK brand, is trying to go more global. And, you know, we have about 26% of our audience in the US. And so, yeah, it's just about trying to grow in the US. So we're getting investment at the minute, launching a crowdfunding investment in 2 weeks now. So it's gone, we had really good initial vibes. So, yeah, it's just trying to get money in to grow the brand even further.
Chris, thanks very much for joining us. That was fascinating.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your time, guys. Is that all right?
Better than good. Yeah,
enjoyed that. Really enjoyed it. It was good.
The official Brighton and Hove Albion podcast.
So we've got two strong looks today. On Glenn,
very safe looks. Not much colour in these. No, but what are his outfits?
Well, hold on. You can tell a lot about a person from their shoes, can't you?
Yeah, a lot.
You got the New Balance 550s, haven't you, Glenn? Do I look?
Yeah. You
got the 550s.
Yeah.
It's casual.
Well, I feel like I'm sat with a psychologist that's just read my mind.
No, he's casual. He likes his choice. Got a nice jean, and you know that it's not a tight jean. It's a nice straight leg. Classic. We love that.
I feel very under pressure here.
Merino cardigan, but not the V cardigan. That's my favourite type of cardigan. The button up. Yeah, and he's got the few undone, which is how we always style it, isn't Terry? A couple undone at the bottom. Nice. You know your thing, not being too crazy.
Go on, I'll let you fabrication choices.
No, we'll stick with you for a bit longer if you like.
Okay, over next to me on my right, we have the
older gentleman.
Three button blazer.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about that, because that's like a workwear style classic blazer, which, you know, real classic bit of kit.
Yeah, this is a small company in Lewis called Darcy. Very much a little cottage industry. They do a lot of stuff from the 20s and 30s almost. That's their look, you know, but they occasionally do stuff like this. It's a bit more modern and I like it.
It looks like a brushed navy, dark navy paired with a black trouser. A lot of people don't like navy and black together. I do. Dries Van Noten famously said navy and black together is a good combination.
Thank you for listening to this, the official Brighton and Hove Albion podcast. Like, rate and review us. And if there's someone you'd like on the pod, let us know via email on podcast@brightonandhovealbion.com. And you'll find links to the club shop and Percival in the show notes.
This podcast is a VoiceWorks Sport production for Brighton and Hove Albion. Sports Social Podcast Network.